It was interesting that there was an article in the paper this past week, a report written about something that a cardinal had said. That's Cardinal Miloslav Vlk, spelled V-L-K. He's from Prague, he's from the Czech Republic, and he was retiring from his post, and he made a farewell address, and based on what he had seen within Europe. And the title is, Europe has only itself to blame for the rise of Islam, says the cardinal. This was in the paper, and let's see, what date was that? This was Thursday, so just last Thursday. He says, Europeans are allowing Islam to conquer, in quotes, the continent, a leading Roman Catholic cardinal has said. Miloslav Vlk, the Archbishop of Prague, said that Muslims were well placed to fill the spiritual void created as Europeans systematically empty the Christian content of their lives. So as the Christian church, as he sees the Christian church retreating, so he sees the Muslim faith increasing. He said that Europe, quote, Europe will pay dearly for having left its spiritual foundations. Now that's an interesting quote, because if you remember that Pope John Paul talked about Europe discovering your origins or reviving your roots. And he says, this was the last chance to do something about it, and the opportunity would not last for decades, he added. Quote, the Muslims definitely have many reasons for heading here. They also have a religious one, to bring the spiritual values of faith in God to a pagan environment of Europe, to its atheistic style of life. He goes on, he says, unless the Christians wake up, life may be Islamized and Christianity will not have the strength to imprint its character on the life of the people, not to say society. The 77-year-old cardinal made his remarks in an interview to mark the retirement after 19 years as leader of the Czech Church. He didn't blame Muslims for the crisis, he said, because Europeans had brought it on themselves by exchanging the Christian culture for an aggressive secularization that embraced atheism. Europe has denied its Christian roots from which it has risen and which could give the strength to fend off the danger that it will be conquered by Muslims, which is actually gradually happening, he said. At the end of the Middle Ages and in the early modern age, Islam failed to conquer Europe with arms. The Christians beat them at that time. Today, when the fighting is done with spiritual weapons, which Europe lacks, while Muslims are perfectly armed, the fall of Europe is looming. So again, we can see from this what he's saying, he's placing the Roman Catholic Church in the prime position to counteract this and give the spiritual values that are necessary to counteract the political onslaught from Islam. That's what he's saying. He says he calls on Christians to respond by living their own religious faith more observantly. Last year, Cardinal José Policarpo, the Patriarch of Lisbon, warned Catholic women against marrying Muslims. The Italian Cardinal Giacomo Biffi also urged the Roman government to give priority to Catholic migrants over Muslims to protect the country's religious identity. And the Vatican has also opposed Turkey joining the European Union, partly because the Muslim nation does not share its Christian heritage. So I thought that was a very interesting article. And certainly when you look in Daniel chapter 8 for a start, we can go back to Daniel. And understand that right at the end time, the beast power, it says in verse 17, it says, so he came near where I stood, when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face. But he said to me, understand, O son of man, for the time of the end shall be the vision. So what he's actually describing here is to go to the time of the end. And verse 23, and in the latter times of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to a fall, a king of fierce countenance, that's Antiochus Epiphanes, yes, but he was a type of one to come. And understanding dark sentences, he'll stand up. And it's very clear that he's a type of one to come as it flows in. And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. In other words, Satan is going to give him his power. And he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. And through his policy also he'll cause craft to prosper in his hand, and shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall he destroy many, and he'll also stand up against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without hand, without a human hand in that sense. But in verse 11, it talks about him magnifying himself and a host, an army. Verse 12 was given against the daily sacrifice. Now this happened with Antiochus Epiphanes, but it also flows into this latter fulfillment. And I heard one saint speaking to another saint, saying that a certain saint which spoke, verse 13 now, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of the desolations to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? And he said to me, unto 2,300 days, or as Zimbardian says, evenings and mornings. So 2,300 evenings and mornings, which is 1,150 days. And then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. Now, if we go over to Daniel 12, flip over to Daniel 12, or just before that, in Daniel 11, it talks about implanting the tabernacle of his palace between the seas of the glorious holy mountain. He'll come to his end and none will help him. So here is the beast power actually down in Jerusalem. And in verse 11 of chapter 12, it says, from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and the abomination that makes desolate set up, there'll be 1,290 days. So if you take 1,150 days, which is the evening and mornings over in Daniel 8, from 1,290 days, you see that you've got about 4 to 5 months, about four months, 20 days, between before the return of Christ, for them to actually move and go away from Jerusalem. And they move, presumably, back into the kind of Roman arena. Or move back, presumably, the beast power moves somewhere, and the Catholic Church moves back to the Roman arena. Now, if we go back to Revelation 13, now this is an inset chapter. It's an inset chapter that's put there because what's happened previously is that in verse 15 of chapter 11, the seventh angel sounded, that's the last trump, and the resurrection has occurred, Christ has returned. And you then have two inset chapters, one with chapter 12, which Mr. Armstrong is going to deal with in the sermon today. And the other one is chapter 13, which, if we just look at it a little bit, chapter 12 is talking about the true church and its relationship with Satan. Chapter 13 is talking about the false church and its relationship with Satan, its relationship with the beast power. And we find in verse 1, it says, and I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns. And it goes into the beast, the actual beast that comes up, mirroring what you find over in Daniel, with the actual head, the heads of the beast being one combined beast. It's a combined beast of Babylon, the Medes and Persians, of Greece, and of Rome. And then you've got the ten horns are there as well, which are to do with the Holy Roman Empire and the various resurrections of the Holy Roman Empire, including the various Ostrogoths, Visigoths, and so on. But in this section here, in verse 11, it says, "And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb." In other words, it looked like Christ, but he spoke like a dragon. It's a false religious system. It's a false religious and political system that is being talked about. "He exercised all the power of the first beast before him and caused the earth and those that dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed." So we're looking here at a worship of this first beast. It's very much a merging of the political system, of the secular system, with the religious. And so this article about Europe only has itself to blame for the rise of Islam, is a very significant news article that we need to take notice of. Because here is this particular resurrection, or this particular beast that is there, that is actually destined to ride the beast, as it says in chapter 17, that said, "Come and hither, and I'll show you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters." So chapter 17, verse 1, "the great whore that sits on many waters." And the relationship is between a whore and a paramour. It's not a relationship of love at all. Because as we see here in chapter 17, we find that although the ten horns give their power to the beast for 1 hour in verse 12, and these are going to make war with the lamb in verse 14, what we find are these ten horns, these ten power centres within Europe, which you saw upon the beast, verse 16 now, "these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and eat her flesh, and burn her with fire." In other words, something goes wrong, and the relationship, they're not getting what they want from each other, the relationship goes sour, and right at the end, and perhaps this is going to be something like four and a half months, something like that, before the return of Christ, right at the end, when that center is moved from Jerusalem, something is going to happen eventually that causes the beast power to turn on the Catholic Church. Now, the interesting point is this. The reason why I've gone through all of that, just very, very quickly, very, very briefly, is that there was another article as well. And this other article has appeared in Friday's paper, yesterday's paper, commenting on this speech that was given by the Cardinal in Prague. This was actually written by the editor of the Catholic Herald, by Damian Thompson. And he says that we have had to wait decades for this moment, but it has finally happened. A leading British clergyman has said something sensible about immigration. Lord Carey of Clifton, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, this week signed a declaration by the cross-party group on balance migration, calling for an urgent tightening of borders to stop the British population reaching 70 million by 2029. He also gave an interview yesterday in which he called for a tougher church. Quote, "We Christians are very often so soft that we allow other people to walk all over us, and we are not as tough in what we want in expressing our beliefs because we do not want to upset other people," quote, he said. And he goes on through the article. It says, "Yesterday, just as Lord Carey was issuing his own warning, Cardinal Miloslavlik, the Archbishop of Prague, marked his retirement with a melodramatic prophecy, quote, unless the Christians wake up, life may be Islamized and Christianity will not have the strength to imprint its character on the life of people, not to say society," he said. The Cardinal is right, but only up to a point. And I think this, what he's about to say now, is very, very interesting and very pertinent when you see what it says in Revelation 17 and how the beast power is eventually going to turn on the Catholic Church. Because he goes on, he says, where Cardinal Vlick displays naivety is in his proposed remedy. He is optimistic that the Church can persuade the West to reject the empty secularism that has created a Europe-wide vacuum filled by people of another faith. The message that, quote, secularism is the real enemy of Christianity is parroted by liberal bishops everywhere. Although they may be horrified by Cardinal Vlick's talk of Islamification, they share his belief that the essential division in the world is between, quote, people of faith and ruthless materialists. Pope John Paul II also subscribed to that worldview. But, and here is the but, and remember this is a writer, the editor of the Catholic Herald speaking, but Pope Benedict significantly does not. Now, I wonder whether we realize that. Pope Benedict doesn't hold to that. What does he do? He says, Benedict wants to convince secular-minded people that, in an odd way, they are already part of the Christian flock because many of their ideals are rooted in the ethics of Christianity. It's the Catholic way all over. Basically, what happens with Catholicism is syncretism. It takes an idea and it mixes it with what it's already got to come up with a new concept. And here we see Benedict doing exactly that, taking the secularism of Europe and saying, that's fine, you've already got the historical roots, you've already got the roots of the Roman Catholic Church, you don't have to actually join the church, but you've got to accept the roots. And he says, in other words, the church's respect for the dignity of the human person is broadly shared by those secular intellectuals committed to a free society. The Pope recognizes this, which is why he has spent so much time talking to them. So does Bishop Nasir al-Ali, whose friends include atheist thinkers, whose respect for the Western Christian heritage is far greater than that of Muslim community leaders or their multiculturalist allies. So it's, the actual lines are now starting to be drawn in a different way. And it's an area that we've got to keep very, very careful watch on, because when you look in Scripture, when you go to Revelation 17, you see this, let's say, it's a relationship of a whore with a paramour. It is not a love relationship. Eventually that paramour will turn on the Catholic Church. But that is what is prophesied. In the long term, the future of Western civilization can be secured only by an alliance between Christians and secularists against the totalitarian ideology of Islamism. That is a strange prospect, And even more uncomfortable is the realization that Christianity's survival as a mass movement may depend on something as prosaic as immigration control. But that is surely what Lord Carey is hinting at, and it's brave of him to do so. So again, it is something is moving in Catholic circles. Something is moving in the sense that they are seeing the unity that needs to be there within Europe. And let's face it, when we look at what Pope John Paul II said, he said, "Therefore I, John Paul, son of the..." This is at Santiago de Compostela in Spain. This was back in 82. It says, "Therefore I, John Paul, son of the Polish nation, which has always considered itself European by its origins, traditions, culture, vital relationships, Slavic among the Latins, Latins among the Slavs, I, successor of Peter, and the See of Rome, a see which Christ wished to be established in Europe." And he goes on, he says, "Europe of the ages, a cry full of love, find yourself again, be yourself. Discover your origins, revive your roots, return to those authentic values which made your history a glorious one and your presence so beneficial in the other continents." And on he went in that particular homily or speech that he issued over in Spain. But realize that he's saying, look, the culture of Europe is based on, quote, Christianity, unquote. That Christianity is Catholicism. That is what the culture is. And the way the Catholic Church has always operated, it allows this syncretization to occur, where you take a concept. It's like evolution. They've embraced evolution and mixed it with a concept that the souls, that, you know, God came down and put souls in these creatures, these monkey-like creatures that became... and the only one, the reason why Adam and Eve were there was because it finally ended up in Christ. But it's mixing all they're not remaining true to the one true husband, which is what the true church has got to do.